KIRO FM HD2 Tacoma, The Pete Carroll Show, Mondays at 9:30.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show, every Wednesday from 9 to 10.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Good morning, everybody. It is the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Somebody made this chair short, and I think it was Jake. Can barely see over the darn computer screen now. Plus, I got to see over Maura. The whole thing is challenging this morning.
I mean, let's be fair. You put the chair really high normally.
I like the chair high. I like having a, you know, a bird's eye view of what's going on in the studio. I don't want anybody to sneak up on me. I want the moral high ground. So I get up there on the chair so that nobody can attack me. I like it a little high. I got to see Justin. He's like on a raised platform back there. So
want me to go higher then? Is that
no, I don't need you going any higher. I don't want anybody higher than me. It's like the king, right? I mean, the king's really supposed to be no one stands. Well, you're supposed to be highest.
King of the castle.
That's me. That's how I like to run this roost right here, baby. That's what I tell you. Anyway, how about this week? The roost. Is this not a roost?
Roost.
What is a roost? Is that where chickens live? Chickens in a roost? I don't know. Hey, this is going to be a good weekend, man. I'm pretty pumped. This is opening weekend for Climate Pledge Arena. I know there's some folks who've already been. I know some people got to open it up the other night. My neighbor, who's awesome, Tess, she is on the construction crew. She's like a foreman on one of the construction crews that's been working on Key Arena or Climate Pledge, rather. And so she's been keeping me updated on what's going on throughout and kind of what the progress is. And as somebody who's been on this project for years now, she ended up going to Foo Fighters. She's going tonight to Coldplay. And then she's going to go Saturday also tomorrow night. So she's getting like a whirlwind tour. Then she's going to see the Rangers, I think, next week. She's getting like the full Climate Pledge experience. And she's like, yeah, I've spent enough time at this building over the course of the last few years. And yet it feels totally different. Totally amazing. She's so proud. It's really cool talking to people that have worked on the project. They're really proud of it. And I don't blame them. It's awesome. It's really amazing. It's really cool that we are finally now able to enjoy this incredibly long process that, you know, look, started with, I mean, I guess for some people it started with the Sonics leaving and that entire fight, but really became reborn in 2012 with Chris Hansen and when he first came in and started this ball rolling. And then really picked up steam. It's almost 5 years to the day. It's funny. I was kind of going back and getting a little nostalgic and looking through everything that had happened and led to all of this. And I found the article I wrote when Tim Leiwicki's name was first mentioned as being a part of this whole thing. It was October 27th, 2016.
5 days from now, it'll be
5 years.
5 years.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's been almost exactly 5 years from the day that Tim Leiwicki's name was first announced as or first rumored to be a part of this whole thing. And look, that's the reason this is getting done. Don't make any mistake that he is the reason that we are now watching hockey here in Seattle more than anybody else. And this is what I wrote that day when I first heard it.
When hey, Ham, do you want to go back in time?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Let me go back in time. Yes. How
Maura,
do I do that?
Maura, do you have my sound?
How do I go back in town? I don't know if Maura is ready for the...
no, I have it.
Oh,
I have.
You have it?
She just needs to turn me on. That's okay. All I was going to say.
Well, okay.
Ready?
Yes. Oh, there we go. Oh, I'm 5 years younger. Does this harp go on forever?
Nope. Oh. That's it.
I dated a girl who played the harp once.
Okay.
How about that? I dated a harpist. Not for very long. There's a lot of ways you could go with that joke about harpies, I guess.
I didn't want to say it.
All right. This is what I wrote 5 years ago when Tim Leiwicki's name was first introduced. My ears perked up, way up. Simply stated, I can't think of a single person with a better resume for accomplishing all of our goals. That's what I wrote in 2016 about Tim Leiwicki. And it's been entirely true. Entirely true. I know there's people to this day that are mad because they would have preferred to have the Soto project work instead of this one. I know you're out there. I know there's people who are specifically mad this morning because instead of wanting to sit in traffic on their way to Key Arena or whatever, Climate Pledge Arena now, God, Key really did some good branding with that. Like, it'll never go away, the idea of calling it Key Arena.
By the way, I was one of those people. I wanted the Soto Arena.
Sure. I wanted the Soto Arena, too, until it became clear that it wasn't going to happen and that this one was. Because what I really wanted wasn't the Soto Arena, Justin. You know what I wanted? An arena.
Okay.
I didn't care.
You didn't care where it was. I gotcha.
As I said at the time, build a floating arena by my house at Green Lake. I don't care. Just build me an arena. What I want is not here, there, or I don't care. I want a basketball team, I want a hockey team, and I want a concert.
But band. You wanted it in the city. You didn't want it in Kent. You didn't want it in Bellevue.
Take it in Kent if that's the only place it'll come. I'm a sports fan. How many games do you think you'll go to a year?
Well, I'm a season ticket holder as with some groups.
Okay.
So probably, I think I have 10
okay.
tickets.
10 times you'll go to the game.
Yeah.
How many times do you think you'll watch them on TV? 60?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's a pretty huge difference. And if basketball comes, do you think you'll be a season ticket holder?
No.
Okay. So you'll go to what? A couple of games a year? Three?
Maybe. Yeah.
So let's say you go to...
Totally fair point.
Let's say you'll go to 10 games a year, but you'll watch 150 of them. Who cares where the darn arena is? Put it in Kent. Put it in Black Diamond. Put it in Green Lake. Put it up north. Put it at east side. I don't care. I just want a team here. And we have one now. That's what's so remarkable about it. I'm excited to go downtown for it. Salk, did the harpist string you along? You know, that's just wrong at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's the wrong kind of joke for this.
Somebody woke up and chose violence at 6:05.
Did the harpist string you along? That's pretty good from the 509. I don't care where the arena is. I don't care if it's in my backyard or if it's an hour away. We finally have an unbelievably modern, beautiful, incredible arena here in Seattle. I can't wait to go and see it on Saturday night.
I should say, tell that to 49ers fans. They probably would like to have that stadium a little bit closer.
I'm sure
to-
they would. Yeah, of course. Santa Clara is not where they'd like it to be. Like, I'm not saying that my perfect scenario would have been to put it in Kent. My perfect scenario probably would have been Soto. But I'll tell you what. I think that there are some specific advantages to it being in Seattle Center and everything that should come with the redevelopment of that area. Again, kind of go back to Tim Leiwicki's history. And before he did this project, the one where he made his bones is LA Live and Staples Center. And you look at the redevelopment that's gone on in downtown Los Angeles since that moment. It's night and day. I lived in LA pre-Staples Center and then when it was being built and then went back to that area somewhat recently. Unrecognizable. You wouldn't believe it's the same place. What's going on down there right now is so happening. And before, you'd have been terrified to go down there at night. Can you imagine what Seattle could end up looking like here in the next couple of years if all of the development that is supposed to happen in Soto, where the Mariners are now starting to make this investment in the old pyramid site and some of the stuff they're trying to build down there in here in Lower Queen Anne, or what are they calling it now? What's the new name?
I mean, they want to call it Uptown. I refuse to move there, but you're right with the waterfront now that the viaduct's gone.
And then the waterfront.
That whole stretch, being able to walk from there to there without having the viaduct's going to change a lot of
things. Seattle could be complete, and after all the work they've done in South Lake Union over the last few years, I mean, I don't mean to like turn this into a big political show or anything, but if they find a way to clean up some of the homelessness issues that are going on in Seattle right now, and at the same time do that building, you know, from Soto up the waterfront all the way through Lower Queen Anne, the city is going to be changed forever in so many positive ways. And this is a part of it. There's nothing better for a community than sports. Nothing. It is the most bonding experience and community experience that cities have. That regions have. We put aside our differences about politics. We put aside all of those other differences because we all are going to throw on the same jersey on Saturday night and cheer for the Kraken. We do the same thing at CenturyLink or Lumen Field. We do the same thing at T-Mobile. We all throw on the same jersey. If you were there over the Mariners' final weekend of the year, and I know all three of us were, the bonding that happens in a community, the social capital that is built, the way we look for each other's similarities rather than differences, sports does that and music and concerts does that better than anything. So I'm so happy today. I don't care where this arena is. I'm just glad it's done. And thank you to Tim Leiwicki and the Oakview Group for getting it done because now we have a hockey team. I wish they weren't, 1-3-1. Like, let's go. Let's win some games, boys. But at the same time, we're going to go watch some hockey, and I'm pretty pumped about that. All right, coming up next here, a huge, huge weekend for for one guy that you probably are down on. But I'm not. I'm excited. We'll tell you everything you need to know about him next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Is this the way you like to rule the roost, Salk? Into the ground? Maybe. I got my chair where I want it now, so I'm at the appropriate height. I'm only 5'10", man. You gotta do what you can. You gotta come up with all the help you can possibly get.
I'm 5'10", too.
Yeah?
Is my chair unreasonably high?
I don't know. Is it?
That's a nice backhand.
I usually lower it when I come in.
You know what, Maura? That's enough. You're a tall 5'10". I'm a shorter 5'10". You know what? Let's get to need to know before this gets worse.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the first step in the 100-yard game for Rashad Penny is out of the way. Practiced yesterday without even showing up on the injury report. How about that? Alex Collins missed practice entirely, even after Pete Carroll thought that he would go. And Penny, obviously now well-rested, he could be poised to get the bulk of the carries on Monday night. I like his chances in this offense as well. The offensive line, excuse me, in much better shape than it's been. Teams committed to running the ball. They spending much more time allowing the backs to run downhill rather than forcing them to accelerate quickly out of the read option and the shotgun set. So all of those things should benefit Rashad Penny, who has the best breakaway speed of all of the backs on the roster. Now, how much will they be able to run, especially if New Orleans is preparing for it? That we don't know. Will the commitment to the run open up the play action game? That we don't know. Can Geno play within himself and the structure of the offense? That we don't know. This offense is going to be under scrutiny, certainly, in its second week without Russell Wilson. Other injury report stuff, we'll see what develops with Damian Lewis. He missed practice yesterday. The best news, though, was seeing Darrell Taylor only limited just a few days after he was immobilized and taken to the hospital. He could play in this game on Monday.
He really feels like he's playing. He doesn't have any doubt that he can play. So we'll hold out hope that that's the case.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
October 27th, 2016. That was the day we first heard that Tim Leiwicki and the Oakview Group would be attempting to work with the city of Seattle to redevelop Key Arena and Seattle Center. Almost 5 years to the day later, the Seattle Kraken will play their first home game in a building that was first mentioned and first conceived of that day.
Thanks, Seattle. Seattle, unbelievably kind. We understand the message that was delivered and the support that was delivered. We will not let Seattle down, we promise.
That was Tim Leiwicki speaking on the old Brock and Salk Show that just maybe a week or so later. We've all been through a lot to get here. I'm just excited about going to the game tomorrow, honestly. I'll deal with the traffic. I'll deal with the parking. I don't care. I'll handle the concession costs and the lines, all of it. Because that's what it takes. That's what it means to be a sports fan, to love sports. There's nothing that brings communities together quite like sports. Right, left, different genders, races, you name it. There are going to be 16,000 people all cheering for the same team, wearing the same colors and the same jerseys, or the same number that sang along with There Goes My Hero, or whatever it was on Tuesday night, or with whatever Coldplay sings tonight. I'm not sure I can name one off the top of my head. Do they sing Colors? Or do they sing Creep?
Yellow.
Yeah.
I kind of confuse Coldplay and Radiohead. They seem the same to me.
No.
Getting this arena built was an amazing accomplishment. Many said it would never happen, and whether you go to a game or not, you now have a team to root for because of this building. And you know what? We're likely to have the NBA team back soon as well. As for the game, Kraken trying to get their second win, taking on a Vancouver team that is 1-2-1 on the year. Also note, NBA action last night, 46 for Steph Curry. Golden State beats the Clippers, and the champs go down to Miami. Heat beat the Bucks by 42.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
When Jerry DePoto was asked about a Mitch Haniger extension earlier this year in June, he reminded everyone that it took two parties. Well, when I asked him about it yesterday, I would say he was a whole lot more encouraging.
I've always had the belief that this is where Mitch wants to be, and if that works out and we're able to come together on it somewhere down the road, then that'll be a wonderful outcome for both of us.
Haniger enjoyed a tremendous season, bouncing back from the two lost years, setting career highs with 39 home runs, 100 runs driven in. He's got one more year of team control here before he hits free agency at age 32. So look, I'm not wild about a huge contract for a player of that age and with his injury history, that's for sure. But There's also something to be said for leadership, consistency, and a veteran presence that I think they're going to need to balance out the youth movement that we're all counting on here. More than that, it would just be a huge sign to the players, both on the team now and potential additions, that the Mariners are serious about their future, that they're ready to, quote, go all in, as Haniger asked of them in that recent column he wrote in the Players Tribune. As for those potential free agents, I did ask Jerry Dipoto about the five big shortstops. He said they're committed to J.P. Crawford and that fitting into the clubhouse and positional flexibility are going to be key factors in determining who they attempt to court this offseason. Don't look at the box score for last night's NLCS Game 5. Whatever you do, you may not want to know that Chris Taylor was 4-for-5 with three more home runs in the postseason.
Unbelievable.
Crazy. Remember, he didn't hit a home run as a Mariner. Dodgers win 11-2. They head back to Atlanta for Game 6 tomorrow. Braves still up 3-2. Red Sox and Astros tonight. Nathan Eovaldi and Luis Garcia in Game 6. Astros looking to close things out at home. That's what you need to know here on a Friday morning.
You think that this Canucks matchup is going to be the same way as the when the Blue Jays come to town? Do you think it'll be as big of a takeover?
Eventually.
Not this week. I don't think it'll be this weekend, but do you think it will be that way in the future?
That's a good question. Whether or not, I don't know. I mean, it depends how easy it is to get tickets, right? I mean, this year is essentially sold out, but if they're willing to pay, you know, exorbitantly to get into the building, yes. I think it's harder. The Canucks aren't very good right now, so that may be a part of it. But if both teams get good, or the Canucks are good and the Kraken are bad, yeah, you could maybe see that. But I don't even really know whether you can go across the border right now, right? I mean, like, I don't see it happening in mass right now.
Okay.
I'm curious to see whether that rivalry actually takes off or whether it's something people just think will happen. Like, yeah, Vancouver's close, but do you feel like Vancouver's, like, right on top of you? Like, you're, like, destined for a rivalry with Vancouver? Like, don't you think one could just as easily develop with Vegas or Edmonton or any other team that you end up playing a lot? I think it could. Maybe it'll happen with Vancouver, and that'd be fine. Like, I'm up for that. Believe me, I already hate the Canucks. Doesn't take much. But, like, I could get into hating the Knights just as much.
Why do you hate the Canucks?
Why not?
Oh, I'm asking you.
Maybe Alex Burrows, and they used to have the Sedin. Yeah, no thanks. There's a bunch of
players. Like there is a rivalry for you already.
Well, but those are just, but not about the Kraken. There's just like some players on that team that there's a couple that I thought were super soft and a couple that I thought were just kind of dirty. And they used to have, what's his name as their head coach? I'm blanking on the guy's name, but he looks exactly like the Bond villain in Casino Royale. He looks just like him.
Remember what era it was?
That was like 2010-ish. 2010, 11, somewhere in there. Vigneault, is that his name? Alain Vigneault? I believe that's his name. He looks just like the guy from Casino Royale. It's pretty remarkable. All right, let's see. Coming up next here, if you missed anything with Jerry Dipoto yesterday, I think you're going to want to hear it. I would say two fairly newsy items. One, his thoughts on Mitch Haniger, I think were incredibly encouraging if you're a Mariners fan that wants him around. And two, you're going to want to hear what he has to say about the future of this offseason, because there are some big-time players that I asked him about, and his thoughts on two of them should certainly stand out. Don't go anywhere. It's coming up next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Jerry, hello, good morning. How are you?
I'm excellent, Mike. Thanks for having me.
How was the reunion? Did you have fun over the weekend?
I did. It was a blast. Got to see a lot of old friends and people I haven't seen in many years. And celebrate VCU baseball, which is a little more on the map than it was 30 years ago.
It's pretty cool. I assume you've been watching the postseason. It's been really an entertaining, I think, postseason. Watching the game the other day and the, you know, sort of missed strike three call in the ninth inning that went against Eovaldi, where do you stand on the whole robo-ump controversy? Would you want to see computers calling balls and strikes?
Yeah, I think there's some combination of, you know, the human element behind the plate in conjunction with the ABS that makes sense for baseball. We have the technology, it's there, and, you know, if you can be accurate 100% of the time, then you should do that. And, you know, I think it's a benefit to the players, to the quality of the game, and I think the umpires are adapting and adjusting to the inevitability of that as well.
So you don't care? I mean, I don't have a good argument against not wanting robo-umps other than that I kind of just don't want them. But I always see, like, the, you know, a pitch where the pitcher clearly misses his spot and he pulls the catcher's glove halfway across and it sort of just nicks the top or the edge of the zone, and it's usually called a ball because it's not a good pitch. You're okay with, you'd rather have those be called correctly than the missed calls. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess on this one, I'll flash back to a different lifetime. I threw plenty of good pitches that got hit really hard, and I threw plenty of hanging sliders that they missed. And, you know, I think I'll go to the school of sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And, you know, if it crosses through the strike zone and that's the way the ABS defines it, then I think that's fair. It's I can't imagine in other sports that there are not instances where, you know, a player experiences some type of success despite the fact he was probably trying to do something else. Yeah. And, you know, it's that's just part of the game.
The other thing I was wondering watching this postseason is just the usage of pitchers and starting pitchers pitching later in games and only going short times, relief pitchers, bullpen games. It sure seems like the traditional use of the pitcher has changed entirely in the postseason.
And especially over the last 2 years. And while I do think it's a developing trend, especially in the postseason, I think it is a developing trend in part because of what we're trying to deal with as an industry coming back from COVID. With the shortened 2020 season, abbreviated inning totals, what we're looking at this year with starting pitchers who last year threw 70 or 80 innings, this year we're ramping up their workload, you know, to 170, 180. You know, they're tired. And I think some of the what we're seeing now is strategy. Some of it is necessity to try to adapt to the world that we've been living in these last couple of years.
As you look at these four teams that are left, are there, and as a team that's trying to get there where they are right now, are there common themes that you notice about the way these four teams were built that you can use or take advantage of in some way?
Yeah, every one of them is a little bit different, and they're all pretty complete. And I wish I could tell you I could view the Mariners as a future Dodgers, where every player on the field seems to be an all-star. But, you know, they're all loaded, and it just gives you a bar that you have to try to meet. And the one commonality among them is if you look at the core of those teams, there are a lot of players that started their careers there, either developing through their system or being acquired when they were young, and then they grow up with that group. And that's what we've tried to emulate here with the Mariners. And, you know, I look at it, I watch those teams, the Uriases and the Luxes and the Bellingers, and, you know, they've always been Dodgers. And we know the Astros with the Altuves and the Correas and Framber and Jordan. These guys have always been Astros. And I think that's something that we aspire to have, as a core of players that came up together, and when they're ready to really flourish, they're familiar with one another and they play well together.
Did you have a chance to read what Mitch Haniger wrote in the Players Tribune?
I did. I loved it. Immediately sent him a text. And yeah, anything that is well thought out, that is heartfelt like that, I believe was heartfelt. That did not come in 30 seconds of reaction or, you know, emotionality. That was a well thought out from the heart piece. And I thought it was incredibly well done. And I thought Mitch gave us a little window into the way he thinks or where his mind is right now. And I thought it was refreshing. And you know, I sent him a simple text, amazing. You know, I thought it was really well done, and it hit the heart. And I agree with him, frankly, on almost everything he said.
I love that he says, I hope the other teams in the league are reading this and they understand we're about to get after it in the offseason. We're coming for one of those playoff spots and more. I think that's a really almost kind of, you know, goosebump-inducing kind of a quote. When we had talked about Mitch before the season ended, I know you had said, and I was asking you about the possibility of an extension. And I know it takes two parties to reach an extension. Does this give you some hope or optimism that maybe Mitch is interested in being here long term?
I've never not had hope that Mitch wants to be here long term. I believe that he enjoys playing here. I know he loves the city. And I know he loves his teammates. This is it's a very close team emotionally. If I did have a sense as to whether an extension was possible, I wouldn't air it on the radio this morning. But I've always had the belief that this is where Mitch wants to be. And if that works out and we're able to come together on it somewhere down the road, then then that'll be a wonderful outcome for both of us.
I was reading Buster Olney. He was writing about the five big shortstops that are on the market this offseason. Seager, Correa, Story, Semien, Baez. Obviously, you have a shortstop, but a few of those, if not all of those players, could also play elsewhere in the infield. And he mentions the Mariners as being a possible suitor and in on a few of those. I know you're not going to tell us exactly what your plans would be, but when you go and look at a big, high-priced free agent acquisition like that, what qualities are you looking for to make sure you have so that you get it right?
Well, we want to know that the person fits in our clubhouse with our group. And, you know, every one of those players is a great player. And they all do it a little bit differently. And, you know, for us, one of the key elements is we have a shortstop that we love. And, you know, JP's our shortstop, and we feel like he is, you know, an anchor on our infield and an emotional leader for our team. So one of the things that's important to us is finding a player who is adaptable and willing to move around the field and maybe get a little uncomfortable. And there's some of those guys that already have done that in their career. Guys like Semien and Baez have done that. And, you know, that kind of selflessness is a big deal for us. And that also speaks well of how the player will fit in our clubhouse. But, you know, the combination of quality play, of high character, of leadership traits. And with all of those guys, you know, one thing that they bring to the table is they bring postseason experience. And, you know, that's also an element that we are not, I guess, we're not going to be dumb to this offseason. We know where we want to go, and the more we can add players who've been there, the better off we are.
What is the process like of wooing a big-name free agent like that? I mean, it's not somebody who's desperate for a job and hey, will you please sign me? I mean, I would assume almost have to make a pitch and start the process early. How do you go about that process?
It is. I mean, you are making a pitch. You're pitching that free agent on your city, on your organization, on what you have to offer. And I think, as with any player in our league, the thing that they will gravitate towards first is, what can you do to help me get better? Because every player, no matter how great they are, the reason why they're great is they're always striving to get better, and they want to know that you have systems and programs and coaches and high performance personnel that can help them take it to a different level. And, you know, and that's going to be part of the pitch. And, you know, we've had great practice with this in the past, I guess most notably during the recruitment of Shohei Ohtani. I've done this in past lifetimes where you get in front of the player and you reference all of the things your club has to offer. And then you empower the people around you, you know, the players on the team, the staff, you know, members of the community to help and really pitch in, because we're not just selling the Mariners, we're selling Seattle and the experience in Seattle. Because, you know, when you're talking about that type of quality of player, you're probably not talking about a contract that's going to land him here for a year.
Right.
So you're selling something considerably different than just a moment in time.
Well, maybe just print out the Mitch Haniger article and put it down there as you're trying to sell that. Hey, this is the kind of atmosphere we've built here. Look what Mitch just wrote. Let's come be a part of this thing, huh?
Or just have Mitch give him a ring and tell him.
There you go. Seriously.
Two, you know?
Hey, Mitch, need you. Make a phone call. Help me out a little here. This is good. As usual, Jerry, I feel like we could keep going, but we will do it again next week. Thanks for doing this throughout the offseason. Enjoy the postseason, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, Mike.
All right, there you go. There's Jerry DePoto, and there's a lot in there. I mean, we can spend a couple of minutes on Mitch Haniger. Let me first start with the shortstops and the conversation there. And it's interesting that, you know, where Jerry goes, he's looking for a fit in the clubhouse and positional flexibility. All right, so let's kind of run through these five. Can we remove Corey Seager from the list? Can we all agree that Corey Seager's not coming here?
I think that's fair.
Can we all just kind of come together and just take that one off our list?
I would love to be pleasantly surprised and be wrong, but yes, I think it's safe to say he's not on the list.
I think we can all agree that Corey Seager is not going to be here next
year. Do you think DePoto calls Corey Seager and Kyle's like, oh, we could talk to him?
I think that's exactly what happens. Yes. So I don't think Jerry's calling Corey. I don't see that as a fit. Let's just assume that one's not going to happen. It's interesting then that, you know, of the two players that Jerry chooses to mention there, and I'm not trying to read too much into it, but he mentions Semien and he mentions Baez as two guys, specifically because they both played second base last year, right? Semien did it for the entire year in Toronto because of Bo Bichette, and Baez did it, well, did it early in his career quite a bit in Chicago, and then because they had, what's the kid's name who came from Oakland? I'm blanking on his name. Russell. And then Addison Russell. And then they ended up trading him to the Mets where he played second base because they already had for a call. So they've both done it. How good do you think those two players are?
You mean, what do you like? What's the rating here?
I was just curious, like, of the year they had last year, and I don't think Baez had a particularly great year last year for him. Semien did. Semien had an unbelievable season.
Semien's 31, Baez is 27 or 8.
Yeah. Leader on the Mariners team last year in WAR. I don't know whether WAR is your perfect stat or not, but wins above replacement is a pretty simple way of looking at the overall contribution of a player. Who was the Mariners leader in WAR last year? Top of your head.
Ooh, I'm going to go with, oh, man, that's really hard.
You got to answer quicker than that. It's Ty France.
I was going to say Fraley or something dumb.
4.2. Jake Fraley.
I was going to say something dumb like that just because of the weird wins that he gave us. But
Jake
okay.
Fraley actually was not as low as you would think. I take it back. Jake Fraley was 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth on the team in WAR last year.
I should have known Ty France.
Ty France had a WAR of 4.2 last year. Mitch Haniger was worth J.P. Crawford was worth 3.8 wins. Mitch Haniger, 2.9. Kyle Seager, 2. Jake Fraley, 1.7. Luis Torrens, 1. And anybody else was below that. Okay? Semien was worth 7.1 wins last year.
Wow.
Baez was worth 4.5.
And Semien hit how many home runs last year?
Semien last year hit 45 home runs.
Jeez.
Now, some of that is Toronto and the lineup and all of that. He had a career year that you would then you'd have to pay for that. But Semien had 7.1 WAR just by himself last year. He was worth as much. He was worth more than Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager combined. How's that?
That's nuts. And that division is not an easy division to be hitting against either.
No, although he's in with a great lineup and a good hitter's park and all of that. But still. That is pretty crazy. And if you think Baez had a bad year, his 4.5 WAR would have led the Mariners.
Wow. Yeah. Perspective is important.
So start thinking about the kinds of players that these guys are. They're legitimate, man. They're going to cost a lot of money, but they are game-changing to your franchise. Why are you talking about letting Kyle Seager go and spending the money instead on one of these guys? Because Kyle Seager was a 2 WAR player last year, and Marcus Semien was a 7.1 WAR player.
It doesn't make my emotional connection to Kyle Seager any less.
That's fine.
I love Kyle. I would love to see him retire as a Mariner.
Who wouldn't? But you know what?
But I understand the logic behind it, and we're trying to plan parades, not trying to just break a curse.
Marcus Semien was worth 3.5 times what Kyle Seager was last year.
That's nuts.
That is a gigantic difference.
And I know the WAR doesn't take into account anything about leadership, being a clubhouse guy,
no.
And being a coach for younger players, and none of that.
Nope.
So I don't know how you replace that, is my other point, because you want that experience. You want somebody who's, and you also want the experience of somebody who has postseason experience.
I think there's a pretty easy answer to that, though, right? I mean, if that's the thing you're looking for, you've got to make sure you keep Mitch Haniger. And that's why the other part of this conversation, these two things are linked. Right? The idea of keeping Haniger is about telling your fans and telling your team that you're in this thing, that you're willing to keep a player that had what'd we just say, 2.9 wins last year. That matters, right? He was a valuable player for you. He came back. Now, it doesn't mean you can just start spending like crazy on the guy. By the way, if you think that Carlos Correa, like, oh, I don't really like that guy, this, that, and the other, he was a 7.2 WAR player last year.
Probably higher this year.
7.2 for Carlos Correa. So again, you can get frustrated and get mad. And I don't know whether Correa is the right move for them. I think there may be a chemistry issue there with Correa. I don't know enough about him. But before you just discount guys, oh, I don't really like Carlos Correa. How would he? I don't know if I like him here. Okay. He was a 7.2 WAR player last year. Okay. That's a huge, huge difference. He had an OPS of 850. Plays really good shortstop. Maybe move him to third base. You don't think he could handle it? I think he could.
I haven't heard you mention anything about Trevor Story yet. Is he even close to these numbers when it comes to war? Or
that's a good question. He did not have a very good year last year, so I don't know that Trevor Story is going to be in quite the same category as those others are. He just had kind of a down year, but I'll look it up for you. Trevor Story was still a 4.2 war player. He still was Ty France. He was still tied with the best player on your team this year.
That's
incredible. And he had a down year.
What is the, I mean, if you're trying to rank these in the amount of money that they would each bring in, I know Buster puts them as the billion-dollar shortstops because they're all probably close. Is there any that is higher than the other when you think it would, what they're going to be demanding for next year?
I think Corey Seager and Carlos Correa are the two biggest earners there.
So you think Semien and Story and Baez are about the same?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, well, it depends. I mean, I think Semien has the disadvantage of being older, right? He's 31 years old, so he's already on a third contract. So my guess is he doesn't make quite as much as the others do. But, you know, I'm guessing Correa goes for the most. He's young. He's a 7+. I mean, he's unbelievable. Correa's such a good player. My guess is Correa gets the most. Seager is second. Some of the injury history with both of them may limit it a little bit, but I'm guessing they're 1-2. Third, I would think is... I think Semien get a lot of money, but a shorter deal. And then Baez is a wild card because of kind of the way things got funky in New York. And I think Story will probably be the cheapest of them all just because of the Coors Field effect, right? How much of it was real and how much of it was what he did hitting in the best hitter's ballpark of all time. He has the elbow issue, sort of affected his defense. Yeah, I think Story's probably the quote-unquote cheapest of the bunch. But remember, he would have led your team in war also last year. That's how important these guys are. That's why there's going to be such a huge chase on for these guys and why the Mariners need to go spend the money on them.
I want to know how the war is calculated. I don't want to get too far into it. But it's just,
you really don't.
Okay.
I promise you don't.
Purely wins above replacement. If somebody else is playing that position.
Well, it's if a replacement player was playing that position.
A replacement player. That's why I'm wondering, what is the variable for the...
You don't want to know. Okay. Trust me. Okay. War came from something called VORP. The first thing they had was
you're right,
VORP,
I'm already out.
Right? VORP was value over replacement player.
Okay.
And so that was like a weird formula they used to calculate VORP. And then people realized that sounded terrible and also they could do better. And so they ended up trying to calculate everything in terms of how many wins you could provide to the team over the course of a year better than a replacement player. So wins above replacement was born.
Okay.
VOR. But trust me, you don't
want
to.
War doesn't sound much better than VORP.
It sounds a lot better, you don't think?
No.
You think war and VORP
sound equally dorky? VORP sounds more fun. It sounds more futuristic and weird and fun and nerdy and algorithmic.
You're welcome to check on everybody's VORP if that's important to you. I think a replacement player is not good. That's kind of a replacement player is not a good player.
Gotcha.
So if you have a zero VORP, that's not a good sign.
I wonder if you were to take an independent poll of all the Mariners players on those five names, if you could get an anonymous... You know, no names associated with who voted and where, which one would get the most votes to join that clubhouse based on what they know of that player now?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. It might be Semien because maybe they're more familiar or Correa. I don't know.
The division, but Correa too? Yeah.
Well, they may be too familiar with Correa. I don't know. So that's a really good question. The problem with asking players anything is I bet you if you did the same blind survey of the players and asked them who led the team in war this year, they would be way off. I bet you Kyle Seager wins.
For the intangibles, those things that you can't measure.
Who had the highest? Well, it's got to be Kyle Seager. He had 100 runs driven in, and Mitch Haniger would be second. Like, I think they would just get it wrong. I don't think they would fully recognize J.P. Crawford at 3.8. I don't know that they would recognize all of that. Maybe they would.
Yeah, it's like, I want to give them more credit than that. I feel like they would.
Well, they're better at this stuff now than they used to. But
yeah, they all have tablets in the dugouts. They know a lot more about what's going on in the game.
It's true.
I think. But the biggest takeaway that I took from Jerry there, the inevitability of robo-umps. He made it sound like it's a matter of it's coming.
Yeah, he did.
So strap in. I know they've been testing it in the Arizona leagues. I know it hasn't been perfect. There's a lot to work out. I know that the game was going to lose some of, you know, whatever you want to put it in from a pitcher or catcher perspective. It's going to lose some of its charm. Sure, but if you can be 100% accurate, don't you want that?
No.
Why?
I can't tell you. I don't have a good reason why. I can't. This is one of these hard arguments for me. I don't have any good reasons. I just don't. I feel like the kid in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Like, I didn't want it. Like, I feel like a whiny baby
Yeah.
I just am fine. It doesn't bother me. I know the individual calls bother me, but I think they even out over the course of the year. And I like the sort of kitschy Americana aspect of baseball like that. I'm glad we have instant replay for the bases. I'm glad we have it for the, you know, home run or not. I think that those moments, that whether it's an out or not, are so gigantic that you've got to have them right. And there have just been too many mistakes made over the years. But I like the informality of balls and strikes being called by an umpire. I can't give you a good reason. You win. How's that?
Yeah.
You're right. I'm wrong.
I don't think.
But I still believe it.
The other argument that I hear a lot is it makes the sport less compelling because it's no longer about the human in any of these things.
I think there's some of that. Like, and I know you'd still have to have an umpire back there to like make the call. But like, you ever watch, this sounds ridiculous, you ever watch fencing?
Nope.
Me neither. But every 4 years they stick it on in the Olympics and they throw these two people up there. And you'd think it would be a great sport. It's not. It's not fun to watch at all. But like everything is like a series of beeps and buzzers and they all mean different things, right? It's terrible. It's not fun to watch at all. And they've tried to dress it up with like, you know, cool looking lights and stuff so that they look cool. It doesn't work. Fencing's not fun to watch even a little bit. And I think some of it is those like beeps and buzzers. Like it doesn't help.
So you're drawing a line between fencing and a robo-ump now.
I told you, I've already lost the argument. I'm reaching, man. I'm desperate. I'm desperately trying to throw whatever I can. All I can tell you is I don't like it. I don't need it. I don't need to make the change. I'd rather make, there's so many other things you could do to make baseball more watchable, which is a bigger problem. The occasional missed strike call or the fact that like everyone strikes out all the time. That there are no balls put in play.
I think I'm starting to see a trend with you not liking change in baseball in general.
I want change in baseball, though. Honestly, I do more. I want
innings rule.
I'd ban the shift.
Okay.
I'd be fine with
that.
Wow. Yeah, I would ban the shift.
So you're old school baseball. That's it.
Yeah, I like old school baseball. I do. But I think there's a reason why. I don't mind all the home runs, though. Like, I got excited about baseball in the early 2000s in the steroid era. Steroids made the game fun.
Sure, yeah.
Who didn't like the steroid era? Barry Bonds at 70 home runs and looking like a, you know, moose up there. That was fun. McGuire, like, I loved all that, and I loved it beforehand. I just think that the one of the issues they have is there's too many strikeouts and too many walks. You got to find more ways. The whole three true outcome thing and everything they've done in statistics has made it so much better to win. If you're not trying to use every advanced metric possible, then you're obviously losing in baseball.
And you don't think the robo-ump would take away a lot of those walks?
Let me finish the point. No, I don't think it would. I think it would even out, basically.
Hmm.
I think that actually not having robo-umps allows you to sort of alter the game a little bit if you need to change which pitches they're swinging at. I think that stats have been great for winning and horrible for fans. I think that, and I think that's true in all sports. Bunting is not a good play for the most part in baseball. It's fun to watch. Fun to watch the excitement of a suicide squeeze late in the game and the wheel play and all the mental iterations that can come from it. Hit and run, basically gone from the game. I understand why. I'm not sitting here decrying the days of, well, if they just hit and run, they would work out here. I know why it doesn't work. I understand the numbers. Hit and runs are fun to watch. They're exciting.
Sure.
Right? I mean, all that stuff is fun to watch. And unfortunately, walk strikeouts and the occasional home run, it's not as entertaining as the way baseball has been in the past. So I think trying to make baseball futuristic, I don't think that's this game.
Futuristic is the wrong way I would classify it.
You don't think robots are futuristic?
Of course I do, but I'm not going to classify it as some kind of like weird space age. The technology's there. It's existed for a long time.
Like Ex Machina or something. All right, coming up next, here's what I hope. I really hope Geno Smith can be better than he was last week. Can he be, though? We'll have that discussion next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.